This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of Treasures in the Dark, 90 Reflections on Finding Bright Hope Hidden in the Hurting, written and narrated by Catherine Wolfe, and is available everywhere audiobooks are sold.
Dynamic voices for a diverse church. This is Pass the Mic.
Greetings and God bless. Welcome to another episode of Pass the Mic. I am not Tyler Burns. This is Jamar Tisby. I am literally sitting in Tyler Burns' seat, though, and we have a wonderful, fantastic, scintillating, interesting guest joining us today. Ms. Bria, what's up with you?
Hello. Scintillating. That was a word.
Absolutely.
I haven't heard that.
I just know. I can feel in my spirit. That's the word that's going to come out after this conversation in people's minds.
Okay. Well, here we are. Not too much pressure here.
No pressure at all. Just be your scintillating self.
I am happy to be here.
For those of our listeners who may not be familiar with you, tell us about who you are, what your role is at The Witness, and all that good stuff.
Yes. So my name is Bria, as you heard Jamar say. I'm a Black woman, you know, we out here. I'm the content distributor for The Witness BCC. All of the content that you see on our social platforms, that is me sending them. So if you see a grammar mistake, don't come after me. I'll probably fix it in like the next 10 minutes. So
don't even assume that. Take credit.
Okay.
For all the dopeness you put out there.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take it. Yes. So that is the hard work I do for The Witness. I have written a couple of things that you might have seen on our blog. One called The Past is Precedence. One talking about... to the pastors of the TikTok generation.
Yes, that was a great article.
Thank you. And then one more. Oh, and then I wrote a sort of a eulogy to some of our big heroes, Chadwick Boseman, Cicely Tyson, Toni Morrison, and Kobe Bryant. Talked about all of them in that article. So yeah, I'm a writer, a budding, aspiring writer. I talk a lot. I think we all talk a lot. I think that's why we're here.
Why we have microphones.
Yep. In front of
us. Yes. Yes.
We probably all were those people in school who got the the comments on the report card. She's great, but she just talks too much.
That's interesting. I know that's probably true of you because you said it.
Yep.
I definitely know it's probably true of Tyler. I was the quiet one.
Really?
I was, never spoke.
I don't believe that at all.
Never spoke. Not in school. So we're here talking about one of the things that sort of gets us, I think, both excited in terms of imagining possibilities. And I've heard it under different labels, rethinking church, reimagining religion, re-something, because the notion is that whatever we're doing now as far as community is not working, or at least it needs to shift and change. Have you sensed that conversation coming up more in your circles?
Oh, absolutely. I've seen people, and I kind of agree with the sentiment of we're not in a post-pandemic world, but I think when we were in the thick of the pandemic, we had this opportunity to really reimagine and rethink this whole church thing and how we're going to structure gathering the people of God, the body of Christ, and living out our faith together in community. And in a lot of different areas, people chose to just adapt for a little bit, adapt to the whole Zoom thing, adapt to the whole having to gather in our homes individually for a little bit, and then we go back to the same old thing. And so I think I sense a frustration of, we had this opportunity, we haven't really seized on that opportunity to restructure and rethink what it means to gather as people of God and live out the calling to not forsake the gathering of the saints and that sort of thing. So
it's almost like when I was growing up, we had a basement and everything depended on the sump pump, so that if there was a big rain and the sump pump was working great, because it would pump water out from the basement area. Mm. But if that sump pump broke, it would flood. And every time it flooded, not only would you have to drain the water, you would have to take everything out. Mm. And in the process of taking everything out, you were more circumspect about what you added back in. You know, you asked yourself, do we really need this? Or can we toss this? Does it need to be in this place, etc.? It feels like that's what's happening with church and community, mm. right? Like the pandemic yeah. was this flood. I would even say our political environment was this flood. Mm-hmm. And it forced us to sort of take everything out as we dealt with the flood. And now the waters are receding a little bit. Like you said, we're still in a pandemonium. But now that the waters are receding a little bit, we're saying, okay, what really fits here? What really goes back here?
Right.
And so we're talking about essentially, I think, reimagining community. Would you feel comfortable sharing? Did you experience that flooding at all in your sort of church community? What did that look like?
Ish. So when I was still a part of an actual church, because I'm actually kind of in the, you know how people are like, I'm in between jobs right now. I'm like, I'm in between churches right now. Right. You know?
I'm working on some things. You know.
Yeah, so what I saw and observed and experienced behind the scenes, because my parents are in ministry, my entire family is in ministry. I come from an entire line of pastors and elders and musicians of church and all of that good stuff. And I saw that there was a really tight hold to just kind of tweak some things so that people felt safe, while people were feeling unsafe to be, in a building. And while it was unsafe, not even just the feeling, it was unsafe, yeah, yeah. like public health wise was unsafe to be, you know, in the building together. We'll, you know, tweak these things, shift these things, but, you know, we're still pretty much going on business as usual. Mm-hmm. We're just, you know, doing things a little bit more digital than we usually do. And then eventually it was like, okay, everybody's gathering, you know, we're gathering back in the sanctuary, but the order of the service is still the same.
Yeah.
The ministry events and all of that thing, all of those things are still the same. And it's basically like 2019 or 2020, I guess, through, you know, 2022 has never happened. Wow. We're kind of back yeah. into, yeah. and I think that recognizing that and observing that is part of why I kind of started stepping away and trying to reimagine for myself. I'm like, if this community doesn't want to reimagine, that's fine. But I think I need something different. Mm. I need a transformation and a shift. And that's when I started recognizing that other people were having those conversations.
Yes.
And so it was a very uncomfortable kind of molding. I think, yeah, just an uncomfortable. Like I'm thinking about these things and wanting to see these things happen, but it feels like no one else in my immediate right. circle and community is. Right. And so I'm taking a step back and feeling a little alone in how I think about faith community and want to think about and experience faith community in ways that nobody around me seems to want the same are having those same feelings.
It's almost like losing, as difficult as disruptive as the past couple of years have been to business as usual, there's also an opportunity to change in healthy ways.
Right.
That in your circles or experience, people aren't always recognizing.
Right.
For me, it was disruptive in the sense of it was revelatory. Mm. It exposed mm-hmm. what people deeply felt and believed mm-hmm. that maybe I could have guessed before, but it actually came out in the open. And I'm talking particularly around political beliefs, around ideas of human dignity.
Right.
Those kinds of things that say, yes. this community isn't what I thought it was.
Yes.
Or I've realized in the past few years that I believe a little bit differently and I no longer fit here, or I've been pushed out because of what I believe. I've gotten so many messages from people who said, I tried to talk to my pastor or our elders or our church leaders about this particular, you know, human dignity issues, issue and I got shut down and I don't know what to do. Yeah. All of that stuff going on. And for whatever reason, whether we're not taking the opportunity for healthy growth and change, whether we've realized in a new way what our faith community actually represents and we don't want to be part of that, we seem to be on the same journey of, okay, what's next? What does community look like now? So as we think about that, well, let's talk about that when we come back from the break.
Okay.
Hey, everybody, this is Tyler.
This is Dr. Jamar Tisby.
And we are excited that you're listening to this episode of Pass the Mic. But let me encourage you to support us. You can do so by going to patreon.com/passthemic. And for just $1 an episode.
Just a dollar?
Now, that's the bare minimum. That's four quarters. But if you want to go higher, okay, 5, 10, higher. 15, that's 20, right. 25, whatever it is, that will keep this show going and keep the high quality that hopefully you enjoy. So thank you for listening, but you can take it to the next level.
Patreon.com/passthemic. We appreciate you.
This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of Power Moves. Ignite your confidence and become a force. Written and narrated by best-selling author Sarah Jakes Roberts. Power Moves will show you how to open your eyes to the way that God sees you and awaken your boldness to effect change in the world by living out the truth of who God says you are with confidence. Power Moves is available everywhere audiobooks are sold. Visit thomasnelson.com/audio to learn more.
We're talking about like reimagining community. So we've talked a little bit about, you know, what has disrupted community as we know it. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about, oh, you talked about Octavia Butler.
Yes.
So tell us about that in terms of community. People are like, what? It's good.
Yeah. So for those who don't know me, which I'm guessing most of you guys don't know me personally who are listening, I am a huge Afrofuturism fan. And it started with Octavia Butler and with her parables series, Parable of the Sower and then Parable of the Talents.
Pause. What is Afrofuturism for those of?
Okay. Yeah, so it is a subgenre sort of within science fiction and the futurism, speculative fiction genre. But really the primary message and the primary stories that are being told within Afrofuturism is the simple fact that Black people are in the future. Huh. And, imagine that. Like, yeah, we're in the future and we're creating technologies and ways of being, modes of being that are central to our culture and the ways that we imagine community and the ways that we imagine progress in ways that matter to us. Mm-hmm. And we should be central in the story. And so really the history of it, the history of Afrofuturism kind of tells you that in the science fiction world. So you've got the fantasy. So you've got the Star Warses and the Star Treks and the, the Game of Thrones and all of those and those different things. And it's like Black people aren't a part of it here. And not only are they excluded from the stories, they are intentionally negatively portrayed in the stories. Wow. They're tropes that are negatively portrayed. The non-human features and elements of those stories that are supposed to represent, you know, marginalized communities. Mm. And they're the villains. They're the ones being attacked. They're, you know, those things. And so Black writers stepped in and said, hey, no, we're going to assert some dignity in this
That's
genre.
Deep. That's yeah. deep. And this all relates to reimagining communities. This is so interesting. So what did Octavia Butler's writing in Afrofuturism sort of get you started thinking in terms of community?
Yeah. So in Parable of the Sower, well, in the series in general, if you're not familiar, there is the main character's name is Laura Olamina. Laura or Lauren? I think it's Laura Olamina. And she is a teenager at the time. She's maybe 15 or 16. And she's grown up in this Black Baptist, you know, background. Her dad is a Baptist preacher. He's very, very theologically conservative, but also in the backdrop is like this kind of apocalyptic future of just everything breaking down. They're living within these really close walls because over the wall there are people who just like want to come in and destroy the community, mm-hmm. just like regular people, not even politicians, but you know, just regular people who want to steal the resources of the community, and so they have to live in these really safe and secure walls. But then you also have the political issues of, and this is, I think this is why the book became so popular with 2020. Well, really starting in 2016, but in 2020 as well, there is a presidential candidate named Andrew. I can't remember his last name, but he's running on the message, the slogan of Make America Great Again.
Seriously?
Yes. And then she wrote this in 1999.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. So this is why people have been calling Octavia Butler a prophet, prophetess, because a lot of the things that happened in the book happened literally in real life in like 2016 to 2020 mm-hmm. and during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. There is kind of a pandemic sort of backdrop in the book and everything. So all of that is happening, and the main character has decided she wants to start her own religion. She's like, she's breaking with the values of the Black Baptist tradition, and saying, I don't believe that anymore. It doesn't make sense. It's not logical. And it's not the way that I have experienced it, and the way that my dad is preaching it, is not really relevant to this moment. And, what people are going through. And so she just starts writing out these kind of philosophical verses. They're not really called verses in the book, but they are similar in style to like Bible verses.
Like a holy book.
Kind of thing. She starts writing out verses, and then she just starts sharing them with people in her community. And it starts resonating with them, and they're like, I want to hear more. I want to know more. All of this is happening, and it's grown into a religious movement over time. At the same time, her brother has also broken with the Black Baptist tradition and gone to evangelicalism.
What?
Yeah. You really need to read this
book. Art imitates life. So were those like religious gatherings different than
yes.
the Baptist?
So there is this really rich description of what Earthseed community gatherings look like. This is Lauren talking. She's the narrator. And she says, we don't gather like, you know, regular church members do at a church on Sundays. What we do is take each community member, the one who is talking for that week, takes a topic that they want to talk about, and they spend 15, 20, 30 minutes giving a talk, giving a speech. Could be like a sermon, but they're less talking at you and more. Although I wouldn't say sermons really talk at you, but that's how she was feeling. You know, within the Baptist tradition that she grew up in, she says, we're not talking at you. We're having a discussion. We're having a conversation where people can ask questions. They can debate with, maybe not debate, but they can disagree with you, out loud, if they want. And so you can like, disagree.
Come
back.
Let us reason together.
Yes. Sort of thing. So they have that gathering and that discussion. And then directly after they bring community issues to the center, to the table, and say, hey, this person needs this. What kind of resources do we have?
So there's like a social justice component.
Yes. Okay. Pretty much. It's on a small community scale, of course, because they're living in an apocalyptic kind of thing where if you need groceries, you're going to have to walk to the next city over to go and get groceries. And so they're like, hey, this person needs medical supplies because they're having really bad, you know, issues or whatever. And so they'll come together as a community and say, who do we know that can bring those resources? Or who do we know that's a healer? Who do we know who has medical expertise or medical knowledge? Or they'll talk about the things that they need as a community because – of course, if you're living in an apocalypse, you're going to need survival things. And so they hash out. It's like a working group meeting of like, okay, what needs do we have? What resources do we have to solve these issues? And then, all right, let's break and give these people the tasks. And then that's going to be our job for the rest of the week is taking care of the community's needs. And then throughout the week, people would like from the – conversation, the discussion that they would have at these gatherings, people throughout the week would just like have discussions about them while they're going.
Could just continue the conversation.
Yeah, continue the conversation. So it doesn't start, or it doesn't stop at, you know, those gatherings.
Yeah.
And that was basically how they did life community together.
So we were talking earlier about, like, you know, there were these, you know, in the terms of a social context, there was this flood in the basement of our church or communal life. So we had to take all this stuff out. And what you're laying out is an Afrofuturistic vision of community. Mm-hmm. I think what did you take out? if that basement flooded, you took out and you decided not to put some things back.
Right.
What do you think? What were those things?
Are you saying with, like, in this vision that Octavia Butler is painting?
For you.
Okay, for me?
Yeah, for you.
I think that, I don't even know if it's take out as much as reconfigure.
Mm.
Just what it looks like and what it means to, I guess, in rightly dividing the word of truth, you know, you have these issues where the person, whoever it is, the pastor or the visiting pastor or whoever, is talking. Sometimes, I guess people feel like sometimes the rightly dividing the word of truth isn't happening. The pastor is giving their opinion of culture and maybe trying to apply scripture to that, if even that. And it's like, sermons aren't talking about the Bible. They're talking about what's happening in culture. And it's like, okay, we need to condemn this thing that's happening.
Wow.
And it's like, okay, where does the Bible come into this? Where does the you can talk about the exegesis and you can talk about the hermeneutics and all of the hermeneutics. I didn't say that word right, but yes, all of that. And it's like, when you're thinking about what, even like if you're thinking about what Octavia Butler, the vision that Octavia Butler paints with the Earthseed community, it's like you can have a discussion about that. And so you're not, it's not, church is not all about what the pastor thinks and what
it sounds to me like the soapbox sermon kind of a thing.
Yes.
You know, whatever hobby horse the pastor is on, that becomes the topic. They slap a little Bible on it. But it's not really arising, it feels like, from the text or something.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I feel that there needs, it feels like it needs to be a shift of what does it mean to have a Bible-based Christocentric faith, where, you know, we want to trust the wisdom and the expertise of people who have theological education or, you know, have all of that knowledge, but also, hey, like we can talk about this and we can discuss this, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It sounds to me like part of what you want to see reconfigured in the church is sort of an approach to teaching, learning, and discipleship.
Yes.
That's there not so didactic, you know, the preacher talking
top
at
down,
you.
Yes.
Tossed down. Sort of a priesthood, like, of all believers.
You don't have any knowledge. I have to give you all
right,
the knowledge.
Right.
And you can't disagree with me because you don't have the knowledge that I have.
Right.
You don't have the PhDs and the, you know, all of that good stuff.
It's actually less pastor centric and more communal in its orientation.
Right.
That's good. I think part of one of the things that I either left out or, like you said, rearranged is what is actually essential to doing church. I was deeply frustrated during the pandemic when I went to a small rural church. We had a dedicated church building, but we didn't have any full-time staff. We didn't have an AV team. We didn't have up-to-date equipment at all. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at some of, like, the plugs. I'm like, they don't even make that cord anymore. So it's like, that's what we were working with. And then we had to not meet in person and pivot to, you know, online services. And I'll just admit, it was so frustrating to me to see more well-resourced churches just be able to do that on a dime. You know, because they had the team, they had the money, they had the equipment, and I'm not hating on them for having it, but it highlighted to me what is truly essential to the church. Because to me, if every church can't do it, it's not essential to being the church.
Exactly.
Right. And so it gets a lot simpler in that sense. Mm-hmm. And I'm still trying to figure out, like, again, it's not bad to have those things. And maybe it's more of an orientation to those things, mm-hmm. that needs to shift and change. But to me, church just got a whole lot simpler when it was really about fellowship and community, about teaching and learning the word of God, and about supporting each other through tangible acts of love, right?
Yes.
I don't know really what that looks like in an organized way.
Yeah.
I think we're still figuring that out. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. And I think you also bring up an important, I think about one of the things that I think needs to be not even just reconfigured or reimagined, but purged is the very rampant ableism and classism that you find within. And I think that when you're talking about the really technologically savvy churches and the the really well-resourced places and houses of worship. I'll say this. I think that I have visited places. One of the first things I think about when it comes to visiting churches and visiting, you know, faith community spaces is, are the most marginalized among us, would they feel welcomed and appreciated here? And I have gone to some places where I'm like, if a homeless person came off the street and was looking for, you know, a word, was looking for a gathering of community, and they find, they just find all of this, the materialism, they find that in.
Just like, I can't afford to be here.
Right. I can't afford to be here. They would, you know, they might feel uncomfortable coming mm-hmm. here and walk right out of the door. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what does it mean that we are in a place where the people who Jesus did most of his ministry and most of his work with and was himself, identified with himself, he identified with the most marginalized of society. What does it mean that those are the people who feel the most unwelcomed in our houses of worship? And then there's the ableism of, I always cringe on during New Year's Eve services, watch night services or whatever. And whoever the person is, whether it's the pastor, whoever is speaking, and he'll say, we could have lost our minds this year, but God, you know, we could have been in the loony house this year, but God, he brought us through. And it's like, but what if my story is I did lose my mind? Is God still, you know? What if I am in a mental institution? Is God still on my side there? Is he still good in that situation? Yeah. Do I still have a testimony worth sharing? If, you know, my story is, you know, I did lose my mind. I did lose limbs. I don't have the activity of my limbs. I don't.
Yeah. Wow.
You know,
these sort of throwaway phrases that we hear constantly in church, but that communicate, well, if you're not physically or mentally capable or able as other people are,
right,
then that's a sign of that God hasn't blessed you.
Right. God does not have his hand on your life. And it's our language, but it's also, I think, the orientation of how we worship. And I guess this is also sort of a language thing, but people will say, like, you know, I can understand if God ain't done nothing for you, but you know, you can sit down in your seat if God ain't done nothing for you. But as for me, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to give God the praise and all these different things. And it's like, I get where you're coming from, but it's like, you know, maybe I it took a lot for me to get into the building today, and I need God to meet me in the pew while I'm sitting. Maybe I don't have the strength to stand. Maybe I don't have the physical ability to stand. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And God can still meet me, you know, sitting here in this place. And my life and my body can still be a demonstration and a testimony of God's faithfulness.
Yeah.
And it does show, like, outside of the language, I think it does show in the operations of the church that of certain churches that the most marginalized, where you're talking about people with disabilities, you're talking about people in, you know, low socioeconomic classes. And I think I should preface this by saying that I'm talking specifically about Black church traditions. I think this is the case, you know, everywhere. But I think that we've got to really rethink how we are caring for people who are not able-bodied, for people who don't have the same socioeconomic resources as others. Like, what does it mean to really have a diversity of ability and of, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
it one of the things that always struck me sort of along the classism lines was those deemed worthy of leadership who would be ordained as deacons or elders almost universally had sort of professional class jobs, college or postgraduate education. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't those who were financially poorer or less formally educated who we typically look at as leaders in the church. That always struck me. Like, is there no wisdom if I don't have a bachelor's degree? You know? Or if I don't have a job that pays six figures or more? So that was one manifestation. I think as well, what you're saying leads me to think a lot more about not people coming to the church, but the church going out to people.
Hmm.
And again, I'm not entirely sure what that looks like, but I wonder if it should even be the case that the houseless person should have to come into the church, right?
Right.
Rather than us seeking them out and grabbing them and saying, you are made in the image of God. How can we love and support you well? And I'm not saying that's absent, but as we reimagine these things, can we actually do that with more intentionality? I also think there's a certain redistribution of resources that should be happening.
Absolutely.
Just within the household of God, right? Like, mm-hmm. we don't even have to start talking about reparations writ large. But in the household of faith, we know that certain churches are struggling financially and resource-wise. And there is sharing, like, you know, churches will open up their buildings for other churches to come worship. More of that, you know, not just that, but more. Why should pastors in the least well-resourced places be the ones who are bivocational?
Mm.
Aren't those the places that require more time, more effort,
Energy, right? More
ability to focus,
right?
And if we know that as different congregations, and I think that's what we're talking about mm-hmm. when we say church, we're mainly talking about congregations and not like capital C church.
Right. Not the body of Christ.
Right. Right.
Yes.
And obviously that goes globally,
mm-hmm.
but it certainly goes down the street too.
Yeah.
And
now you're talking about, I mean, you in a word now, because now you're talking about the Acts 4 community. Like they had all things in common.
Right.
They sold all their possessions and had all things in common. So yeah, I think there's a need to, yeah, what you're saying is necessary and,
You know what I'm calling this? What came to mind for me? Afro-theo-futurism.
That is a mouthful. Afro-theo-futurism.
Afro-theo-futurism.
Okay. The gospel according to Octavia Butler.
Imagining a theology and ecclesiology from a Black perspective, mm-hmm. but in a future of possibility and abundance. Right? Afro-theo-futurism,
yes.
For what we need to sort of reimagine what community looks like. You said you're in between churches. What is community right now for you look like?
Oh, that's a complicated question.
Very sensitive too, yes.
Yeah, I think right now it just looks like connecting with people where I can connect.
Mm-hmm,
For a while, I was still doing a... And we really should get back to this, doing a Bible study with my former roommates. We were meeting on Zoom every week. And, just finding different ways to plug in and connect to my fellow siblings in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Still
figuring it out.
Still figuring it out. And I think that what's so amazing is that even while I'm figuring it out and even while it's uncomfortable to not have that security, what feels like is necessary security of being connected to an actual church in the traditional sense, I've still been able to feel Jesus, you know, meet me in this. I mean, y'all have talked about the spiritual wilderness, in the spiritual wilderness of not feeling like I'm being punished, but feeling like, you know, Jesus is using this time to mold and shape and expand my imagination for how he can meet me.
That's
and
a great perspective.
Meet us as the body of Christ.
I think that's a pastoral word. I think for those who feel like, and including me, feeling like we're in this spiritual wilderness, this in-between place from whatever metaphorical Egypt that we were in to the promised land, that it is an opportunity. I mean, God always uses the wilderness to shape and prepare people.
Yes.
I mean, you think about Moses, John the Baptist, Jesus, right? Those were all times of shaping and preparation. And sort of what I'm getting from what you're saying is, yeah, it's hard, but it's also an opportunity to be open to the abundance of God and what God might be doing in this stage of the church, particularly in the United States. And how he might be shaping us differently, molding us more into the image of Christ and preparing us for whatever's to come. So to me, I don't know, this season feels less about coming up with the right answers and more about asking the right questions.
Yes.
What absolutely. Is essential? What does it mean not just to do church, but to be church? Not just where are we going, but who are we going with? You know, who's in our community, those kinds of things. So I don't know if listeners were expecting the solutions.
Here. I hope not, because let's just imagine together.
Yes.
Let's dream together.
Let's Afro-theo-futurism together.
Yes. And I'll say this last thing, too. I think I think. I have also had some conversations in the secular justice space, I guess is what we can call it.
Sure.
Because, you know, I'm in communities of organizers and activists and things like that. And there is a very real feeling among a lot of people in a lot of different organizations across the U.S. that in the justice space, there is a spiritual deficit, and not even just in, as far as religious convictions and spiritual convictions, but just like, how do you do such soul crushing work and still have hope and joy and love?
And how
do you get people to join a movement that we really believe in, whether it's redistributing wealth, whether it's, trying to end police violence and brutality and trying to end just systems of domination and exploitation and oppression of all kinds. It can be soul crushing work. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, in the organization that I'm a part of, Refund Raleigh, if y'all ever want to
shout out
to Refund Raleigh, the dopest people in the city. we were just trying to get people to fill out surveys of like, okay, what do you feel like this city needs? What do we need? What do we want city council to focus on in the budget? And it was like, what community services do you really care about? And so we have a survey where people can fill out what their priorities are. And we ran across some houseless people, and we were just talking about how neglected and just neglected they were feeling. And it was a really a soul crushing conversation to have with people. And it's like debrief sessions, we're like, okay, how do you keep hope in things like that? How do you feel like the strength to feel like the work you're doing is important and is going to make an impact and a difference, and that the things that we're doing we're actually going to win and taking care of people and trying to end these things that we think are wrong, that we believe are wrong, that our values and our convictions tell us are wrong. And so I say all that to say, that there's a real need to recover that sense of within the church space of fully integrating the spirit and the material of, you know, taking care of people's spirits and taking care of people's souls, but also caring about their material reality and trying to transform that, that we really need to pursue.
Mind, body, spirit.
Mind, body, spirit.
Holistic church.
Simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bria, y'all, love listening to you and learning from you. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Pass the Mic. Let's do it again.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.